I just got to thinking while we were singing how sometimes it's a heavy burden to serve God. And I find myself just trying to take things one step at a time, because that's all I can do. That's all I can handle. And when I'm taking things one step at a time, I really have to focus on how much I need God in that step. I stop thinking about how far I have to go or where I'm going to end up. And I focus on that step, because that's the only way I'm going to get through it. It's fitting. In class, I kind of did the high school class today, and we studied Judges. And we talked about the different judges up until Judges 10. And I ended up asking, kind of gave them a summary of the chapter, and ended up asking the kids, because Judges basically is different people throughout that time period that were bringing back the children of God back into the fold. They were bringing them back. And so I asked them, just like in the stories in Judges, when that person goes away, when that judge is no longer there, what do you do? What are you going to do? And I ended up doing a silent vote. And they're probably worried that I was going to share these. I don't even know if I'm going to look at them, but it was a good way for me to get them to answer whether or not they would like to be a judge at that point, or if they're just going to try to stay a child of God. Because the fact of the matter is, when the judge is gone, God has to raise up new judges. When the people of God go away, so I asked them, there's someone here today, someone here in your life that brought you here and is bringing you to God. So when that person is gone, are you still going to be faithful to God? That's the question I asked them, and that's the question that I ask you. I'm not going to collect papers from you. But when that person that brought you here and that person that loves God and wants you to know more about God is gone, what are you going to do then? So I'm going to pause there because I can't seem to get this working, and try to compose myself. So that's what I was thinking about, though. And I'm going to share a video with you, and it's going to introduce what we're going to talk about today, which is taking your first steps, taking your first step.
Launch and a controlled drop. This is as good a descent as it's possible to make. Its parents are there to meet it. A little dazed, perhaps, but all in one piece. One gosling, at least, hasn't made it. And this chick appears to be in a bad way. At last, it responds to its mother's calls. The resilience of a barnacle goose chick is extraordinary. But there are still chicks unaccounted for, somewhere amongst the rubble. The parents can't risk searching because they need to lead their two survivors away quickly before predators arrive. A third one has made it. But it needs to catch up. Three out of five chicks have made it. Without such a dramatic start in life, it's unlikely any of them would have even got this far.
First steps are hard. To give you some background, those geese, the only way that they can be born is if their parents make a nest on these huge cliffs and nurture them. And the thing with these birds is they can't bring food to their chicks like normal birds. So they have to go down by the water's edge and in the meadows for them to be able to get food. And the only way they can do that is by taking a very large first step. Feels like that's what we have to go through sometimes. So, those steps can be dangerous. But as demonstrated there, it's a necessary part of life. A single first step is where our life begins, and a single last step is where it ends. Every step in between determines who we are, and each step is constantly shaping who we become. What are first steps? What do they mean? What can we learn from them? Is it easy to see why we're afraid of taking first steps? The uncertainty alone is enough to cause you to just be frozen in place. But the danger that surrounds us tells us both to jump and to stay still at the same time. It's only a matter of time before we have to take that first step. But it's not just that first step that we take in our lives. Like when we're toddlers, for example, we can actually have many first steps in our lives. But when we're toddlers, we can't even remember all the times we fell before actually conquering that challenging upright walk that humans do. Right? But then there are other first steps. First steps when we meet new friends, when we go to school for the first time, when we try a new sport, for example. Or we could change schools. It might be a new class that we're going to. We might learn to drive as a first step. We might get our first job, our first girlfriend or boyfriend. We might have our first college experience. Every new experience that you have is a step toward a longer path. And I always try to keep these short. This is kind of a part of a two-part, so I just kind of broke it in half so that I can pick up next time and go further into steps. But what I really want to focus on today is not so much the journey and the everyday walk, but just looking at the first step and how that impacts us for the rest of our lives. There's something I noticed about the reluctancy of the first step. It makes me think of this chick on the top of that cliff. And the chick's feet were just kind of edging over looking over, kind of right off the edge of the cliff. If I was standing on the edge of the cliff, I couldn't get that close. I'd start to, like, tingle and do weird stuff. Because it's overwhelming when there's that drop right in front of you. But this chick just edges over and thinking about it and then jumps. It's crazy. But you can see why there's reluctancy. There's always a time of comfort and safety preceding that first step. Right? For the chick, it was they were in their nest. Their whole lives were spent with their parents taking care of them, keeping them warm, sitting on the top of this cliff in a nice warm nest. And then they had to do something different for the first time. So after that comforting stage that you go through, you always have the haunting thoughts of giving up what you had. Those chicks on top of that cliff, they're never going to be there again. But they're going to have to take on new responsibilities, and they're going to go have their own chicks on another cliff. Did you ever feel like you were in a really bad situation and you felt you just had to get out of it? I gotta get out of here. I don't like this. I gotta do something else. Maybe it was a school you didn't like, a job you hated. Maybe it was a friend you had or an activity you were part of. But whatever it is for you, did you ever step away? After you made that decision, you said, I'm out of here. I'm not going to do this anymore. Did you step away and then realize that it wasn't as bad as you thought? After you got a new perspective, did you think, well, that it wasn't that bad, actually. I don't know why I wanted to get out of there so bad. There's the old saying that you don't know what you have until it's gone. So there are probably multiple reasons why this is true. But I really want to focus on the point of this is to understand the first steps. And the major one I want to point out is sometimes we can convince ourselves to take that leap, that first step, by playing out in our mind that the direction we're going is going to be better. It's going to be better where I'm no longer going to be here because I'm going to go and be in a better place. And sometimes it is. Sometimes you do leave, you take that first step, and it takes you to another place. And it is better. But when it's not, that's when you get that feeling that it wasn't so bad. I really didn't know what I had. And what's happening is I'm going to a different place that might be worse. I'm having different experiences. And now I'm comparing it to the old experiences that I had. And I'm recognizing that, it wasn't that bad. It didn't really get that much better, so it must not have been that bad. So that's one way that we're able to look at taking a first step. And when you take a first step in a new direction, you're contrasting it with your experiences. For me, it was my job. Not too long ago, I worked for Paid Family Leave. And I have not worked there for over 2 years. And don't get me wrong, I have no plans to go back. But for the last 2 years, I've had so many ups and downs with my new job that, and my job, it really takes a lot out of me. If I can explain it, the traveling, the paperwork is different, the people are different, and the environment is kind of uneasy. So even though I was in a job that was going nowhere before, it had a lot of freedom and it had a lot of stability that I lost. And I immediately realized that when I took my new job. Because it seems like I always have to be on my toes there. There's always something changing. There's always new steps needing to be taken around every corner. Everything's new every day. Everything's different. Everything requires some decision that needs to be made. And these are decisions that I don't really have answers to. And it's been by God's grace and the wisdom that I pray to Him for that I've been able to get out of some of the situations that could have gone a lot worse for me. And as for the things that are going well, I just have to stand in awe for the favor that God seems to bless me with. I owe all of the praise to Him for everything that He's established in me. These are where first steps can take you. They can take you to a place that you don't necessarily think you want to be. But if you forget all that, if you forget all the future and the journey and everything that you're worried about, and you tell God, hey, this must be where you want me to be because this is the step that I'm taking. What's next? Where do I go with the next step? Concentrating on that step that you're in by reaching out to God every day. So I make a lot of spreadsheets at work. And I think that helps me out a lot. It's like putting up smoke and mirrors, like for my ability. I just make a spreadsheet and everybody's like, oh, wow, he does a good job. Right? But really, I'm just making a spreadsheet. And some of the spreadsheets, they get really complicated. And there's different sheets on the spreadsheet. There's different tabs. And there's crazy formulas interacting together. And I feel like I waste a lot of time sometimes just trying to get those right. And I don't know if that's actually helping anybody or just myself or whatever. But I can spend hours and hours trying to, like, invent shortcuts. And sometimes there's so many steps that the data has to travel through that it becomes unusable and unmanageable for most people. It's kind of rendered useless for someone else that doesn't know how to use it. And even myself, I'm learning these new steps. I could learn one step in the spreadsheet. Like, oh, yeah, that's easy. I know how to do that, right? And then you go on to the next step and then on to the next step. And they're all new, and I'm learning something new every time. And then I realize when I have to go back for maintenance, and I have to go back and change something or correct something, you know what? I don't know how it works anymore. I forgot how it works. So I have to take that step all over again. There's a relearning process there. So that's another way that you could take a step. Because if you forget that you took that step, then you have to go back. And you have to do it again. Does anybody remember taking a step to acknowledge that Christ is your Savior? And then almost forgetting that you took that step and what that meant. Having to go back and relearn what that step means for your life. Having to say, oh, when I gave my life to Christ, that means I had to let go all of that other stuff. That means I had to become a new creation. That means I couldn't go back to the old me. I couldn't go back into my old habits. It's an important first step that we need to understand. Because sometimes we have to take that step again. And we have to give it all back to Christ. Because we said, oh, well, I got used to things and now I know how it works. So I just kind of took it upon myself, Lord, to finish the journey without you. And then you fall. Like a toddler who doesn't know how to walk yet. And you got to get back up and take another first step. Let's turn to Mark chapter 8. And I want to talk about a man in the Bible that was the king of first steps. I wonder how this disciple must have felt. Because he had a personality. He's one of the disciples. There's a clue, right? He had a personality of someone that was not afraid to take the first step. Any guess as to who that was? Who would take a first step out of the disciples? Peter. Peter took a first step out of a boat, right? But he also... What's the analogy, like, I guess kind of like putting your foot in your mouth is taking a first step, right? Peter was willing to do that a lot. He was always the first one to speak. He was always the first one to try something. It's really a credit to him to be like that because he was all in. He was 100%. I can do whatever you want, Lord. I'm going to follow you no matter where I go. So in Mark chapter 8, here's an example of this good trait that he had. It says, Jesus went out and he called his disciples into the towns of Caesarea and Philippi. And by the way, he asked his disciples, saying unto them, who do you say that I am? That's a really cutting question, right? That was a really risky question to answer in those days. Right? Because people were asking that question and people were getting killed for giving the wrong answer. Because if you think that Jesus is something that he's not, Other people didn't like that. Other people that didn't know who Jesus was didn't think that you should think that he's like the Messiah or something. But Peter answers, he says, it says, they answered, John the Baptist, but some say Elijah, and others, one of the prophets. And he said unto them again, but who do you say that I am? That's not what I asked you. I said, who do you say that I am? And Peter stands up. He says, I know the answer. I got this. And he said unto him, thou art the Christ. And in some versions it says, the Son of the living God. One of the other Gospels, I think it says, if it didn't say it here. And he charged them that they should tell no man. And he began to teach them, and the Son of Man, that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected of the elders and the chief priests and scribes and be killed, and after the 3 days rise again. And he spake that saying openly. Okay, so this was a really big credit to Peter. And then right after this happens, Jesus starts saying, okay, you're right. You're right. You're right, Peter. You got it right. You're going to be blessed because you know this fact that I am the Son of the living God. And so he says, okay, because I'm the Son of the living God, here's what I got to do. I have to be a sacrifice for the world. I have to go and ultimately be killed. And but in 3 days, I'm going to rise again. And Peter didn't even get to that part. He was taking that first step already as he was talking. And he was saying, no, I don't want you to die. You can't die. You just got here. 3 years. I just got to... you can't die. This can't happen. Right? And this was... What does Jesus reply to this? But when he turned and looked at his disciples, he rebuked Peter. He got mad at Peter. He said, get thee behind me, Satan. For thou savorest not the things that be of God, but the things that be of men. So this same trait that was so good in him to recognize that Jesus was being was the Son of the living God, that same trait is now causing him to stumble because he immediately went back to his flesh, to his human understandings. I believe in the Son of God. I love the Son of God, and I don't want to see him die. And if he understood that he was the Son of God, he should have understood that he had to die for the sins of the world. And he should not have been selfishly wanting to keep Jesus for himself. So it caused him to fall. And it serves as a warning to all of us, for we're all in danger of this happening to us. We're all in danger of falling the way that Peter did. No one is immune of the possibility of spiritual downfall. Peter might just be the easiest disciple to identify with, and the reason is probably due to how apparent his humanity was. We can really identify with humanity because we feel the same things. We want to do the things that are kind of carnal and of the flesh. He was impulsive and impetuous, just like we are. He made mistakes and he spoke unwisely without thinking about it, just like we do. And these very things about Peter the unlearned, rather rough, clumsy fishermen are the very things which attract us to him. Peter's fall Peter's ultimate fall was gradual, though, because he had to come to the realization that this was going to happen, that Jesus was going to leave him. And it was going to cause him to have to take another first step. He was all in when he took that first step to meet Jesus, right? But saying goodbye to Jesus, he wasn't ready for that yet. I'm learning that the steps that I have taken and that I've been taking have been carefully driven by God. My path feels more uncertain than in years past in some areas of my life. And I've had to learn to continually reach out to God when I feel like that I'm falling. I'm trying to be self-aware and not self-reliant. We have to be aware of self-reliance in every shape and form. It always leads to failure. Proverbs 28:26 says, "He that trusteth in his own heart is a fool, but whoso walketh wisely, he shall be delivered." It's time to ask ourselves if you're trusting in yourself and in your own wisdom and strength in any way. Are you being self-reliant? There's another part of this that I realized because of our class this morning, is not only can you be self-reliant, but you can be reliant on someone else. And neither of those are acceptable. We spend our whole lives trying to learn, we spend our whole young lives trying to learn how to be independent, right? That's what you learn growing up as a kid. I got to do things on my own. I got to be independent. I'm not a success unless I become independent of everyone else, and I don't need anybody else. And then the problem is, once you gain that independence, you have to spend the whole rest of your life realizing, if you're saved, if you love God, that you're dependent. You are dependent. Spend all this time trying to be independent, and now you have to turn around and try to be dependent again. We have to depend on God. So especially in these first steps, especially in the first step, this self-confidence and the lack of prayer in your life, the lack of prayerlessness. Prayer is just a communication to God. Right? And the absence of prayer means that you don't think you need God. You don't want to ask God to guide your steps. So they kind of go together. They usually go together. What need is there to pray if we think ourselves to be strong? We're strong enough already. I don't need anybody. I'm independent. So you don't pray. You don't ask God what to do. You don't ask for guidance. You don't thank Him for the gifts that He's already giving you. You just think you can do it on your own. So prayer is an admission of weakness. It's recognizing our insufficiency. And it's probably the reason for 90% of spiritual breakdowns. You just stop talking to God. You just stopped. I want to read a little bit from Luke 22 and continue talking about Peter. Luke 22, starting with verse 40. When he was in the place, he said unto them, "Pray that ye enter not into temptation." And as he withdrew from them about a stone's cast, and kneeled down and prayed, saying, "Father, if thou be willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done." And there appeared an angel unto him from heaven, strengthening him. And being In an agony, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was as it was great drops of blood falling down to the ground. And when he rose up from prayer and was come to his disciples, he found them sleeping for sorrow, and said unto them, "Why sleep ye? Rise and pray, lest ye enter into temptation." So there's kind of two things going on here. I think it's amazing that Jesus, right before, the night before he's going to be killed, he's extremely stressed out, and he warns them at the beginning, don't go to sleep, don't fall asleep, because you're going to be more susceptible to temptation. And they don't listen to him. Peter goes over there and finds a rock, used for a pillow, and falls asleep. And he starts praying by himself. And it says that when he started praying, that an angel of the Lord came and started strengthening him, giving him strength, giving him courage. Who doesn't want that? Who doesn't need that? Well, it don't work if you just go to sleep and you don't talk to God. And then when he rose up from prayer, he found that they were all sleeping. And he warns them again, wake up, you got to pray to God, because otherwise you're going to fall into this temptation. Peter was about to fall into the worst temptation. He was about to deny that he even knew Jesus. So it's kind of this concept of following the Lord, but from distance. Okay? I'm going to follow you, but I'm going to go over here on the side and do my own thing until you call me. That's different than having an interactive, ongoing, personal relationship through prayer with Christ. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work to serve God from afar. Going on to verse 47 in Luke 22. And while he yet spake, behold, a multitude, and he was called Judas, one of the 12, went before them, and drew near unto Jesus to kiss him. But Jesus said unto him, Judas, betrayest thou the Son of Man with a kiss? And they which were about him saw what would follow. And they said unto him, Lord, shall we smite with the sword? And one of them smote the servant, the high priest, and cut off his right ear. And Jesus answered and said, suffer ye thus far. And he touched his ear and he healed him. So they went to sleep. Peter went to sleep. But now we come to find out that Peter, he had a sword in his belt. What do they call it? Like a sheath or something? He had a sword in a sheath when he was sleeping. So when he went to sleep, was he praying to God and saying, bring to pass whatever you want to happen? Or was he planning on fighting back with his sword? And the answer we just read, because when they came to take Jesus, they realized what was going on. And Peter said, I'm not going to let this happen. I got this sword. I'm going to take this sword and I'm going to attack this guard that's trying to take Jesus. And he took a swipe at him and it cut off his ear. Sliced it right off. That's how close he was to killing him. And before the ear could even fall to the ground, Jesus' hand reached over and restored it onto his head. Because again, Peter was acting in the flesh. He was taking a first step, but a wrong step. He was not understanding that this had to happen. He had to allow them to take them. There had been many times before where they tried to take him, and it didn't work. He would just like disappear because it wasn't time. But this time, he wasn't going to put up a fight. This was the carnality of Peter. To be carnal is to, and this is a second part of your first step. You can't be carnal in your first step. You have to be like that toddler, innocently trying to take your first step. Depending on your father above you, that's right there ready to catch you in case you fall. That's how your first step should be. It's always an indication that we're out of touch with God. We're out of touch with the Lord when we say and do rash things. A carnal Christian so quickly brings dishonor upon the name of the Lord. 1 Corinthians, let me skip that actually. Peter acted like an undisciplined child here. And he cut off this soldier's name. His name was Malchus. Do you think that was a good decision? Can you put yourself in his place? How emotional would you be when the person that you served, this person that you've came to love, is being taken away? Would you fight it? Would you fight anybody that you could? Would you be carnal? We can't fight against it. We can't get away from the steps that we have to take. We can't just stand on the cliff and never move, because it's just another road to death. Those chicks, they would just starve if they stayed up there. So they had to take that step. But the point is when you take that step, are you asking for your father to help you in that step? Or are you looking to the future? Are you looking to all the things that could happen down the road? You have to concentrate on that one step and let God hold your hand. Let God send that angel to watch over you. Another example is in Luke 22:31 says, "The Lord said, Simon, Simon, behold, Satan hath desired to have you, that he may sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for thee, that thy faith fail not." And when you're converted, I want you to strengthen your brethren. And Peter said, "Lord, I'm ready to go with thee both into prison and to death." This is that other side of Peter again. "I'm ready to die for you. I'll do anything that you want. I'll follow you in every way." But did he follow him when he wanted to stop him from taking away the sins of the world? Was he just uneducated? Well, what was it? Was it something that he disconnected? Or did he become selfish? That's the question. I think he got selfish. I think he knew exactly what was going on. I think Jesus told him many, many times. And when he said this in Luke, it was probably a lot further back. Because this is how we miscalculate our steps, too. Because in this instance, and I know this has happened to you guys, because if somebody's talking about something that's going to happen in 3 years, or 2 years, or a year, however long a time period you want it to be, and this is what I do, so I know that this happens, I think, oh, that's a year off. Yeah, I'll do whatever you want at that time. 3 years, I'll be ready by then. Yeah, 3 years, I'm all in. This is what Peter was doing. And this time, it went past faster than he could blink his eye. And when it came to that point, after Jesus told him this, they've already had this conversation. Jesus could have told him, you said you were ready to go to prison. You said you were ready to die for me. What happened to you? Are you not the same person? No, he got selfish. He didn't want to take that step. He also mandated him here, look, when this happens, this is going to happen. And I know you said you're ready to go to prison and die for me. But what I asked you to do is that you strengthen your brethren. And that's the step that Peter had to ultimately take. He had to learn how to take that new first step to strengthen his brethren. It's a dangerous, very, very dangerous place to be too arrogant. To boast about what you're going to do. To place that self-confidence in you. I can do it. I can do everything. Peter did that one more time. And it's a story found in Matthew 14. Starting with verse 22, Matthew 14, 22, and says, straightaway, Jesus constrained his disciples to get into a ship and to go before him onto the other side while he sent the multitudes away. So here's Jesus. He's working with all these multitudes and they're wanting to be healed by him or fed by him. And it comes time when it's time for them to go home. And he tells his disciples, hey, just go out on the boat, go out onto the water, and I'll send these people away, and I'll see you guys later. So he did that. And then after he sent the multitude away, he went up into the mountain, in verse 23, apart from them to pray. And when the evening was come, he was there alone. He went off by himself, and he's praying. And he sent his disciples on this ship, but the ship was now in the middle of the sea, and it was tossed with waves, and the wind was contrary. So the irony, he told them to go onto the ocean, and they're having a terrible time out there because the ocean ain't cooperating. There's like a storm going on. And in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went unto them, walking on the sea. He got done praying. He came down from the mountain. And he just starts walking across the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, it's a spirit. And they cried out for fear. They started to get scared. They didn't know what it was. Some kind of ghost. Something that's coming towards the boat. And Jesus called out to him. And he said, don't be afraid. It's just me. Be of good cheer. And Peter answered him and said, Lord, if it be thou, if it's really you, let me take this first step out of this boat. and come out to you. And when he came down out of the ship, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw that the wind was blowing hard, he became afraid suddenly, and he began to sink. And he cried, saying, "Lord, save me." And Jesus stretched out forth his hand and caught him, and said unto him, "O thou of little faith, why did you doubt? Why did you doubt me?" How many times is this going to happen to Peter? How many times is he going to take this step of faith? How many times does it take until we learn to stop doubting God? To stop trusting Him, that step is guided by Him. To learn to pray to Him, to not be carnal, to not turn back to our flesh. Taking these steps of faith can make every single one feel like the first one. It's an ongoing dependency that we have to grow into. Peter had to grow into the man that he was going to become. Because when Jesus left, he had to be somebody else. He had to be a new creation. He had to give strength to the rest of the disciples. There's really no wonder that we doubt when we try to depend on ourselves. When we turn to that self-reliance. Because we understand that if we can't handle it, well, nobody else can, right? Nobody else is going to be able to handle it. I couldn't do it on my own, so nobody else can. That's the way we think. But it's not right. God can do anything. Anything is possible with God. It says all things are possible with God. So we need to live every step in prayer. And we need to live like every step is our first step. Because I watched some videos in preparation. It wasn't anything that I could end up showing, but I saw lots of like toddlers walking towards their parents and trying to take those first steps. I watched lots of first steps. And one thing that I noticed is with the children, usually, when they were successful, let's start here. When they were not successful, they got distracted and they went to other things. They tried to go to a table, or they just fell down on the carpet, or somebody else in the room, they were looking over here or something, and then whoop, there goes their legs. They just fall on the carpet. But the ones that were successful were the ones that were watching their parents, because their parents were encouraging them. They were strengthening them. They were saying, "You can do it. Just take a couple steps. It's only 3 feet. I'll catch you if you fall." And they were just watching them the whole time. And they just started walking forward. That's how we're successful. We have to take that first step, and we have to look to our Father and just take it one at a time. That's all we can do. So next time, we'll continue. And we'll look at the journey. Because after you start taking a bunch of steps, you end up into a routine. And so I'm going to talk about how we can stay on that path even when we're in a routine and we start wearing down and our fatigue sets in. We get tired of of taking the same old steps. And we'll start thinking we can do it on our own again because we've taken those steps so many times. But we need to keep our eyes on the Father and let Him gently reach out and save us faithfully every time we fall after every step. God bless you.